Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to the Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. This week, I'll be chatting with my friend, Bob Botanic, who is in Decarcerate, the Garden State. We'll be talking about ending prison slavery and a proposed prisoner shutdown on September 9th. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Bob Botanic.
Bob Botanic, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a great opportunity.
Well, it's nice to talk to you again. So we haven't been on the soapbox, but we have spoken to each other before.
We rode our bikes together.
I know. We rode our bikes. You rode on Tour de Peace from New Jersey to D.C. and joined us there. That was a lot of fun.
I rode my bike 200 miles just to meet you.
Yay. I rode my bike like 3,500 miles just to meet you.
That?
So I beat you. So tell my listeners a little bit about yourself, Bob, and what brought you to activism?
That's a big question. I've been at it in one fashion or another for, I guess it's almost 40 years now. I grew up in the 70s. I was born in 1960, and some of the first things I got involved in was when Jimmy Carter was bringing back the draft registration. We protested that. There were some environmental concerns. That was the war in Central America was going on. Mm-hmm. The Carter administration was backing the Afghan rebels, which
right.
was the beginning of the whole, what now has become Al-Qaeda and Taliban, you know, with the Brzezinski Doctrine. And so, you know, I was involved in anti-war protesting and community organizing around racism issues and police issues and environmental issues. You know, I've been involved in a lot of different things. One common denominator through it all, though, has always been anti-war. So to me, that's one of the key issues of concern.
Well, and it's unfortunate that there's always wars and there seems to be very little movement around this peace issue since Obama's been president.
It is something, because it seems like there's a lot of folks that they look at these issues more as a way to back a candidate or to unseat an unpopular candidate who's unpopular around a particular issue. But then they forget about the issue once their own candidate takes the seat. And that's, I've gone to the anti-war marches, and it's always pushed me a little bit back when they start talking about, we're going to remember in November. And I'm thinking, yeah, they're going to just put a pro-war Democrat in there.
Exactly. Oh my God. Yeah. That's just, and so this November, I don't even want to think about it, let alone remember in November. It's just, well, the one thing is, if Trump wins, maybe there'll be some kind of movement.
Well, there are activities challenging both candidates, mainly Trump, but Clinton, in your own state in California, wasn't too welcome there, was she?
I don't remember anything that happened.
Oh, there was some pretty significant protests by some of the immigrant groups when she was making the answer.
Oh, I didn't hear about that. But
to show you how shallow I am, I'm backing Jill Stein because she posed with my, we produce a newspaper called the New Jersey Decarcerator,
uh-huh.
and willing to allow me to have a couple pictures taken with me handing her the paper. So she got my vote.
Well, that's how, there, I think that's there's, how more to, I am. There's more to recommend her in that, though, too.
No, I know. I'm just, you know, making light of it.
So, I'm, you know, in California, we have a socialist party on the ballot, the Peace and Freedom Party, so...
The Mimi?
Huh?
Mimi Solstick?
No, he is with the Socialist Party.
Okay.
And so we're the Peace and Freedom Party, and our candidate, well, we pick our candidate at the convention in August, but Gloria LaRiva won our primary in June. So she's my friend. She's a good person. So and I'm lucky that I get to vote for somebody, and you get to vote for somebody that, you know, we have more in common with than just going and holding our noses and voting for the lesser evil, or the evil lesser, I like to call them.
Now, Gloria LaRiva, that's Party for Socialism and Liberation.
Yep.
They hosted me at the Gay Pride event in Asbury Park. They had a table, and they allowed me to distribute the paper in front. Uh-huh. So you know, I work with all the groups, you know, because, you know, a lot of these, the more left parties, they actually have an activist approach as well.
Right,
so, you know,
exactly.
And when I work on issues, I try to build coalitions, and I'm not like a joiner of a lot of these parties. I'm more like I try to work as the glue that brings them together around issues. And that's, you know, what we're doing in New Jersey with the decarceration movement.
Well, that's great, and that's why we're speaking today. So tell us about Decarcerate the Garden State. And what is it? What's your goal?
Well, we formed about 2 years ago. It came out of there was a strong movement in Newark opposing school privatization, and I was helping out with that. I live in New Jersey, and I'm about an hour from Newark, but it was what was going on in the state. And so through that, I've always been concerned about mass incarceration, and in a way, it's a war on our own streets, and it's a form of repression. And so the folks that I came in contact with through fighting against privatization also had a common interest with fighting against mass incarceration. And so we started talking, and we started holding meetings, and our first major event was about 2 years ago in front of the City Hall in Newark. We basically had a panel discussion right there in the street. We had an excellent half hour or so presentation by Johanna Fernandez, who, and you can find it if you look her up on YouTube. I think it's like a good introductory course on the history of mass incarceration. She took it right back from the days of enslavement to today, and also highlighted how the modern era of mass incarceration was really drummed up starting in the Nixon administration, and of course escalated in every administration after that, but it was a response to the black liberation struggle, and to a certain degree a response to the anti-war movement. So they started having this war on drugs and putting people in prison for things that they're doing to their own bodies, but not necessarily hurting other folks unless they're stealing to support it or something like that. But right. Yeah, so the war on heroin was actually a means to undermine the black liberation struggle, and then since then, every administration has escalated and increased the number of people put into prison, and especially the 2 terms of the Clinton administration. I believe he increased the prison population by better than 500,000 in the United States. And for Hillary Clinton now to claim the mantle of looking for prison reform is kind of laughable with that regard. I mean, we're supposed to listen to what she says and forget about what she has done.
Right.
Because she was a big supporter of it at the time, and she loaned her rhetoric in support of drumming up the mass incarceration. So our group, one of the first things we did is we collectively wrote what we call the New Jersey Decarceration Act. And in our early days, we had, we thought we had, I'm not even going to name him, but we thought we had an elected official who was going to present it and pursue it, and he kind of suggested that he was, but he never followed suit. But basically, we call for a 50% reduction in New Jersey's prison population. Now, New Jersey, compared to a lot of the other states, does not incarcerate as high a percentage of its population as a lot of other states. However, according to the Sentencing Project that just released its study, New Jersey is the very worst in the nation in the probability of ending up in prison for someone who is black versus someone who is white. Mm. Now, average in the nation is about a 6-to-1 probability, so a 6-to-1 likelihood. So if you're black in most states in the country, you're 6 times as likely to end up in prison as white. In New Jersey, it's 12 times. Wow. Literally twice the national average. So the politicians in New Jersey, they like to claim credit for having reduced the prison population since 2000, and I think they reduced it by 25%. And, I mean, that's significant, but you have to put that up against, is it really benefiting everybody, or is it actually making it worse for black New Jersey residents? And so this study coming out now, it just hit, it kind of gives an exclamation point for what we're doing in New Jersey, mobilizing the state around the September 9th. A movement that started inside prisons is calling for a national prison shutdown of all the work operations that go on associated with prisons, including services provided to multinational corporations for next to nothing as far as wages go. Basically, it's enslavement. Most folks probably know that the 13th Amendment did not truly free the slaves. It just redefined what needed to happen in order to enslave someone. So if someone was duly convicted of a crime, they're still eligible to be enslaved in the United States. And that actually might be a more economical way to gather free labor providers, convict them of a crime, because before that, they'd have to go to Africa and kidnap them or breed them. And I hate to put it in that terms, but that's the way they looked at it. Right. That's the way they raise the next generation of enslaved is through basically through breeding, and I don't mean to sound harsh with it, but that's in their minds, that's what they were treating human beings like livestock, like chattel, of course we know. So, but today, a conviction, once you're convicted, you become eligible to be enslaved, and so. Across the country, and a lot of prisons around the country, the prisoners are saying, no, this is not right. And so September 9th is actually the 45th anniversary of the Attica State Uprising, which led to the massacre, which was led by the Governor Rockefeller, of, I believe, 49 people, including guards and incarcerated men. And so that's the date that the prisoners have selected to launch a coordinated multi-state strike. So what we proposed in New Jersey and was approved by a number of organizations so far is that we organize solidarity events around New Jersey on that date, with the demands, we will support the demands of the prisoners that are opposing enslavement. We will call for a 50% reduction of New Jersey's incarcerated population, free all political prisoners, and improved conditions for New Jersey's incarcerated. And we're researching that now. We don't want to just make vague reference to conditions like health neglect and food and violence. I mean, that goes on across the country. In private institutions as well, in privately run institutions as well as in state-run prison institutions. But we want to get specific with specific details. And there's a number of people in the state who have been gathering information about specific cases that give an example as to we're going to access that information and put it together and use that information to make that demand. Now, we don't know if there's going to be any activity by New Jersey's incarcerated, and we're not telling them to do anything because it's not really our place to decide that. We do want to let them know what we're doing, though, because that hopefully if they hear that people are advocating on their behalf on the outside, that'll give them a little more hope. I mean, one of the things that the prison institutions, one of the first things they want to do with a new prisoner is to remove any sense of hope, remove any sense of them considering themselves to be a human being. Basically, it's a dehumanization process that they go through, and actually the guards go through it as well because they need to be dehumanized in order to be able to treat the prisoners as less than human. Although, of course, the prisoners go through a more harsh version of it. But we're hoping that they hear about what we're doing on the outside that will help bring some humanity and also bring some hope that, you know, some people on the outside are at least trying to do something. And also we hope that we can get that word in. And we're also trying to encourage the prisoners, if and when they can, to let us know what's going on inside as far as, you know, the various forms of neglect and deprivation and the violence, etc. It's very difficult because all the communications are monitored. Any piece of mail coming in or going out doesn't necessarily get to its destination. It gets read. Phone calls are monitored. Prisoners are afraid. The families are afraid. Everyone's afraid. They're afraid that if a piece of information is traced back to them, that they can suffer retaliation of a million different sorts. I mean, you see what's going on in the streets across the country with police shooting down people, you know, dozens of bullets right in front of cameras, and everyone sees it on YouTube every night. There's a new video out. If you see that going on the outside with all the cameras, you can only imagine what goes on when there are no cameras. There are so many ways that a correction institution can basically kill somebody and make it look like, you know, a natural causes or an accident or whatever. So there is a lot of fear, but we're hoping that we can figure out a way to, you know, respect the confidentiality and put enough, take out enough details so that they can't figure out exactly where each piece of information is coming from, etc. So we're right now we're trying to organize at least three events, one in Camden, one in Newark, and one in Trenton at the State House. And we're also working with college students. We're hoping to have leaflets going out on all the campuses in the state on that day on September 9th. New Jersey also happens to be as many people think New Jersey is a big liberal state, but New Jersey happens to be one of only 16 states where cannabis arrests have actually been increasing in recent years. New Jersey last year arrested 25,000 people for cannabis possession of one sort or another. And New Jersey spends $127 million a year, according to a ACLU report. That was the amount they spent in 2011. And it's not, you wouldn't expect that to change. If anything, they're spending more because the arrests are increasing, right, on cannabis enforcement. And that's money that could go toward incarceration prevention and, you know, helping people pull their lives together instead of, like, harassing consumers of a product that's legal in some states or semi-legal in other states. It's creating this friction. It also creates a situation of potential violence every time there's an arrest or a raid or whatever. New Jersey's, again, it tries to come across as this liberal state where, you know, we decrease the number of incarcerated, but we have twice the disparity as the rest of the country, which is horrendous to begin with a 6-to-1 disparity. New Jersey has a 12-to-1 disparity. And then one of the top countries for cannabis arrests. So we have a lot of decarceration work to do here.
And before the interview's over, I'll give you an opportunity to tell how people in other states can become involved also. But you mentioned that one of the demands is to free political prisoners. Now, the United States would say it doesn't have any political prisoners. What's the definition of a political prisoner, and how many do you approximately do you think are here in the United States?
I'm thinking it's in the hundreds, but I'm sorry, I'm not I'm not the leading expert on the topic.
Right.
But it's basically someone who has gone to prison for actions taken toward a political effort, or who was caught a sentence and it was targeted for political reasons. I mean, it's not those who became political once they were in prison. For those who are serving, who are serving prison terms because of the political work that they've done.
But then the establishment would trump up charges and things like that against them, or give them super harsh sentences, like in the case of Chelsea Manning.
Correct. Chelsea Manning's a political prisoner for sure. And when I say free political prisoners, I believe that means free Chelsea Manning as well.
Right.
You know, there's numerous examples of people who are serving terms for either fabricated charges, trumped up charges, or for something they did and they caught like a particularly heavy sentence for, etc. And so if we're going to fight against mass incarceration, we should always remember those in the struggle who are incarcerated for their role in the struggle, and put them at the front of our set of demands. And we believe that in New Jersey, and I believe some of the other groups around the state are also making that as part of their September 9th demands as well.
Right. And then Barack Obama will go around the world, saying, for example, Cuba, like Cuba has harsh incarceration and political prisoners, doesn't even bat an eye with the hypocrisy of it.
Yeah. And unfortunately we have a subservient media that does not bring out those issues because they're easily, it's easy to do. I mean, you could find numerous snarky articles on the internet and from all the alternative sources that will point these kinds of issues out. But the mainstream media, which most people read, they keep us focused on, Trump versus Clinton and the Kardashians and et cetera.
Kardashians.
See, I don't even know how to say it.
I didn't even know what you were talking about at first. But, it's not just the media. It's like entertainment. It's like the cops and the district attorneys are these knights in shiny armor, and the criminals always deserve to go to prison. And this is a really hard issue, Bob, because when I ran for governor of California, of course, Jerry Brown is in the back pocket of the prison industrial complex here, the prison guards, law enforcement, private prisons, just about everything. It's a really hard issue because people, they see the media, they see entertainment, and they believe that everybody in prison did something wrong and they belong there.
Well, yeah, and there's enough of night and the entertainment shows that kind of promote that whole idea. And you mentioned the prison unions and the prisoner guard unions, and you got to also consider the police unions. I mean,
right.
there's a lot of overtime dollars, like in the cannabis enforcement that I was mentioning. I don't know what the percentage is. I'd like to know just how much of our police dollar in New Jersey goes toward cannabis enforcement. But they have to testify in these cases. They process these cases. One of the big lobbies opposing, changes to drug laws are the police, because
right.
They're paid, there's and people some people like they focus all the attention on the private prisons, and the private prisons are bad, don't get me wrong, but that's only like a small percentage of the prisons in the United States, and we have to recognize that there's different kinds of money grubbing going on through the public facilities as well. I mean, they got contracts.
Oh, of course, yeah.
The construction, all the security equipment, the secure, you know, all the electronic gates and camera systems and all of that. That's all a lot of contracts that go into that. The attorney, you mentioned the attorneys, the judges, the bail bonds industry, the policing industry, all of these different sets of forces, and they all become lobbyists. And the other difficulty is, even among activists, like a lot of activists will say, you know, they're against mass incarceration, but they don't want to be seen as, you know, being soft on criminals, coddling criminals. And I think that's something that we have to get past in the United States. And just, there are people that, in part of their lives, they may need to be separated from society, but the way the system is, the retribution that's built into the United States penal system, it can't be fixed. There's just so much violence and deprivation and abuse that's built into the prisons. You can't. It's kind of like you have to start the whole thing over.
I can think of a few people that need to be separated from society: Barack Obama, George Bush, Dick Cheney, Hillary Clinton, all of those were, but they're the ones that are out and profiting and doing just fine, and they are mass murderers.
And that, and I agree with that, and that kind of also brings out a big hypocrisy with how the system, and also those are in the, you're mentioning individuals. There's a whole corporations that systemically do this, and they have a whole, you know, corporate structure built around it, and it's all sterile to them. To them, it's just, you know, it's just a matter of business. It's not even personal; it's business. And as routine, they're making you know, billions of dollars off of policies that are killing people and depriving people and destroying habitat, destroying the planet, etc. So,
well, that's
yeah.
One thing about like Bernie Sanders. People got all excited because he says he wants to close the tax loopholes for the rich. Well, you know what? The rich people employ teams of accountants and attorneys to find other loopholes. It's just ridiculous when you talk about things like that. You know, the rich, unless there's an entire systemic change, these Band-Aids are, you know, just Band-Aids. They're not, like you said, they're systemic. Mass abuse in the system, and you were just not talking about the prisons, the military, the poverty, the homelessness, the sickness, the disease, the environment. There's just mass abuses, and you know, the people think they're going to go press a button, you know, in November, and everything's going to be better, and that's just couldn't be farther from the truth.
Yeah, It's kind of a double-edged with the issue of mass incarceration. I consider myself basically an abolitionist as far as the U.S. Prison system goes, but I also believe that it's necessary that we make incremental demands, and that kind of like makes me a hypocrite in a little bit of a way. For all these systemic issues, they're not going to be addressed until there's some sort of a revolution. But
our collapse.
Yeah, our collapse, and then who knows which way that's going to go.
Right.
But how do you tell people who are who may not survive till tomorrow? Oh, we're going to bring a revolution and everything's going to be fine. No, we need to be able to tell people we're going to fight now to make immediate improvements.
Right.
So we want to get people out now. We want to get people out of the facilities now. Mm-hmm. I mean, for a few reasons, but one of the reasons is we need them in our struggle. You know.
I agree with that. What I'm talking about is the people on the top.
Oh, I know. I'm not disagreeing with you. It's systemic, but it's kind of like a.
I'm not going to give a starving person a sandwich because we haven't had the revolution. No, you know, that's not exactly what I was talking about.
No, I was suggesting. I was just saying it's kind of excuse me on the issue of mass incarceration.
Mm-hmm.
It's challenge, because we want to, on one hand, talk about the systemic nature of the prison system, how you can't fix it, and on the other hand, we're calling for people to get out and for, you know, to retroactively apply the change to the law that says that they got rid of mandatory minimums. So you can pass a law getting rid of mandatory minimums, but you got people who are in prison for that. So then the next mandate, you know, it's legitimate to make that other demand, make that retroactive to get them out. And that might sound like you're a prison reformer when you're saying that, and in a way you are, and you're working with reformers, but that doesn't mean that you're in favor of the prison system. It's just a challenge. You know, there's a lot of challenges on this issue, and that's one of them.
Well, Bob, I want to leave some time in the show to play the song, and I'm going to look up Johanna's video, but can you...
Can I give her websites and stuff?
Yes.
Okay. Our group is called Decarcerate the Garden State. You can find us on Facebook. We have a website, decarceratenj.org. We have decarceratenjblogspot.com, which is our blog, and that's probably more frequent. That is definitely more frequently updated. We have updates almost every day on that. And my phone number is 908-881-5275. And in addition, our email address is decarc@decarceratenj.org. Anyone who's interested in helping make September 9th a reality, it has the potential now. If we can make this national, we could set a decarceration agenda that the politicians aren't going to respond to, but we could at least give a platform for those who are fighting the system to raise during the election era. So it's an alternative to getting hung up on, you know, who's going to win the election. Let's fight for decarceration. Let's all unite around September 9th. Now, if you want to try to get something going in your state, or you're in New Jersey and you're hearing this and you want to get involved with us, give us a call, contact us. We'll help you find the groups that are working on this in your state. And if nothing's going on in your state, we'll let you know what we're doing and maybe help you, guide you in some starting tips to get it going. We've still got a couple, 2.5 months to go to make this happen. It has tremendous potential. Whether it's going to have the promise that it could hold remains to be seen, but it's worth the fight. It's worth to at least, you know, support this, what's going on. And basically we're allowing those on the inside to take the leadership on this. And that's what's important about this as well.
Well, absolutely. Well, Bob Botanic, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Send me all those links and numbers you said, and I'll put it on the post for this show. And we do have plenty of time, so hopefully, we can get some excitement going and get some things going for September 9th. I think it's very worthy, and I think what'd you call it, like a general work strike or something?
That's what they're calling it, a nationwide prison shutdown.
It's very nonviolent, and it's very in the tradition of making change. And so hopefully this will be, like you said, a good start at least to make this conversation.
I really appreciate this opportunity. Great article that you wrote about this issue.
Oh, I know. It was wonderful. I worked like really hard on that. and we'll share that again too. Thank you, Bob.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's the Soapbox for this week. As always, I hope you were informed and inspired to do further research on this subject and maybe activism. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar. I'd like to thank my friend, Bob Botanic, for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. And we're going to end the show with a song from Bob W. and the C-Dubs called 99 Decarcerate. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to The Soapbox. Peace out for now.
Nah, nah, Attic State, September 9th. 9 was at the stake. 9-9, now enslaved. September 9, when we break the chains, when we put down the tools and we give it a rest. Non-violent enslavement, protest. 13th Amendment, supposed to set us free, ready to get. Was never meant to be punishment for crime. Duly convicted, your labor is now forcefully conscripted. 9-9, at the stake. September 9 was at the stake. 9-9, now enslaved. September 9, when we break the chains, corporations standing in line, your free labor pumps their bottom line. The government saves, eliminating pension jobs, millions work for free, your labor gets robbed. On September 9, we're gonna make a change, gonna take a stand, gonna turn the page. No matter how we're treated, our lives at worth, we'll say not today when they call us to work. 9-9, at stake. September 9 was at stake. 9-9, now enslaved. September 9, we break the chains. We're freeing enslaved by freeing ourselves, laying down our tools, leave them on the shelf. No more working for pennies, and often even less. The system's wicked, we're giving it a rest. Exposing the system, prisons for profit, money off enslavement. We're gonna stop this. 9-9, Attica State. September 9 was Attica State. 9-9, incarcerate. September 9, the Garden State.